The Party Wall, written by Stevie Davies and read by Matt Addis and Joan Walker.
Chapter 1. He nursed the wall, propped against pillows, attuned to every reverberation. At first, Mark had whiled away the time with a book. Gradually, he left off reading and immersed himself in this quiet act of witness. Strangely, the vigil had no power to bore him. Concentration remained deep and constant as he listened out, or listened in, for his neighbour. There'd been an intermittent scratching or rustling sound he was unable to interpret, but that had ceased. Even when the silence remained well nigh unbroken for half an hour or so, and he had to get up and stretch or pee, Mark experienced no, or little, impatience. "Whatever I can do for Freya, I'll gladly and honourably do," he told himself, grateful for the calm intentness of his spirit. She schooled him. She made him a better person. There was an overarching sense of forgiveness. Not that there was anything Mark should be forgiven for. He brought lunch upstairs on a tray and ate cross-legged on his bed to be near to her. The sound of his own chewing blocked off any small noises, and he occasionally paused to listen. Next door's dog broke the trance with a desolation of baying, very near at hand. There was a shriek of, "Storm, no, get down!" Mark started back from the reverberation. Soup slopped onto the tray. He disliked mess and would not normally eat in bed. Everything was in process of change. Dogs know, Mark thought. Dogs smell the death in a house. But not even the damp snout of a dog can nose out the presence of a person through a wall. Freya's bedroom door clicked. Animal feet skittered down the fox's stairs. She was locking Storm into the kitchen. Out on the landing, in his socked feet, Mark detected her footsteps padding back upstairs. As Freya re-entered her bedroom, Mark returned to his. It was the rhythm of their lives. The soup was tepid. He finished the bread and cheese and brushed crumbs from his sweater. Mark settled back down again. His body warmth fed the wall, and he hoped that a remnant flowed through to Freya. The magpies in Whitethorn Wood set up a quarrelsome churring. Shush! They were the least ironic of birds. Their violence threatened the songbirds out there, but what could one do? When the predators had finished mobbing whatever it was that had aroused their spleen or appetite, there was a quiet spell, haunted by murmuring. Kneeling, he laid his ear flat to the wall. Was Freya singing to her husband? They say music dies last, and Mark could believe that. The husband's voice had been inaudible for many days. Now the three of them composed themselves for the long act of waiting and witness, only a membrane between them. This vigil Mark would not have missed for the world. 5 months ago, turfed out of his beautiful home, Tŷ Hafan, he'd landed in this terrace of nobodies where walls were thin and neighbours hugger-mugger. He reminded himself that this was temporary. He'd soon be home, with the hope of taking Freya with him. As it had turned out, the move to the Crescent had been providential. How otherwise would Mark have come across his darling? His sole desire was to be close to Freya and open to her. Imagine if this wall was suddenly drawn up like a stage curtain. It would be revealed that he and she were face to face, a meter apart, perhaps, gazing into one another's amazed eyes. His sympathy would flow out to meet her suffering, and Freya would know for sure that she was not alone, and never would be. One wished Keir Fox gone, but not for selfish reasons. Prolonging the man's life was extending his suffering. And her suffering. And for that reason, my suffering, he thought. The bottom line, Mark would do anything for Freya, except leave off loving and watching over her.